On this edition of News Analysis, we're discussing what's being called a slow genocide resulting from the use of uranium munitions in US-led wars around the world. Stay with us as we ask the experts what lies ahead if these kinds of weapons continue to rule the world. I need to remind our viewers that some of the pictures you're about to see in this report are graphic.
These Afghan babies were born with severe deformities. And Mohammed Daoud Merikai, an Afghan-American doctor, blames the U.S. forces for these crimes. He says that the U.S. used depleted uranium in Afghanistan. Merikai has described this as genocide in his latest book entitled Afghanistan After Democracy. This book gives an insight how grim life is in this country. All birth defects were revealed through alarming photographic images. Mr. Merikai complains of being overwhelmed by the number of these cases.
People had lost their lives without any physical sign of injury. And then there were, of course, bizarre scenes where birds on trees had melted. And that kind of posed the question as to what's going on.
The U.S. flatly denies this. These findings have not been supported very much by the Afghan officials, too. They refuse to talk to us on this issue on camera. The U.S. bombarded Afghanistan in late 2001 to topple the Taliban regime. The Taliban was ousted from power, but the U.S. used a massive amount of depleted uranium warheads at that time, Merikai says. And the U.S. forces are still using them, he claims.
Since 2001, when the U.S. invaded Afghanistan, the U.S. has used a lot of uranium weapons in Afghanistan and many other types of weapons that have no use in conventional warfare.
Merikai's book does not finish here. It goes on saying that it was a lie that democracy has been installed in Afghanistan. The book blames the U.S. for seeking its own interests and betraying the Afghans under the pretext of democracy and reconstruction. It refers to the reconstruction process of the U.S. as total fraud. Merikai now wants to earn more from his book and spend the earnings on some development projects here in his country.
It's not only in Afghanistan where depleted uranium weapons have been used and local people were increasingly affected. During the first Persian Gulf War in early 1990s, Kuwait and Iraq were also reportedly bombed by over 350 tons of such weapons. But here in Afghanistan, there seems to be no way to fight it. Fires for Sheikh Press TV, Kabul.
Well, joining me now live from Philadelphia is journalist and writer Lynn Din. Also with us live from Chicago is Afghan activist, writer and politician Dr. Mohammed Daoud Merikai, who was, of course, his comments you were hearing in that report by our correspondent in Afghanistan. I just put my first question to our guest in Chicago. Mr. Merikai, since this program is about the use of depleted uranium specifically in Afghanistan and the use of uranium munitions around the world, in one of your articles, you've said that Afghanistan has become the disaster that words could not describe. And you've posted photos of babies born deformed. We were not able, of course, to show the pictures or all of the pictures because they were so shocking. Tell us about your research and, of course, the use of depleted uranium in Afghanistan by the U.S. forces.
Thank you for having me in the program. And I like to point out that initially when the bombing in 2001 took place, everyone was on the lookout to see any type of unconventional conditions or diseases that had emerged back in the 1990s when the war in Iraq took place. And in the first few weeks of the bombing, many people started expiring or dying from without having any physical conditions. In fact, villages, the entire large segments of population have perished in eastern Afghanistan without having any physical illnesses. And so a group of researchers, our affiliates and colleagues, have come and they collected urine samples from Afghanistan, and these urine samples, when calculated, found that the uranium isotopes in the urine of Afghan victims were anywhere between 300 to 2,000% higher than the normal acceptable level. The normal acceptable level is 10 nanogram, and they were anywhere from 300 to 2,000 nanogram above the accepted level. Subsequently, in various villages in the Pashtun-dominated areas, a lot of people tend to show various bizarre conditions, skin lesions, sudden deaths, spontaneous abortions among women and animals, human and animals, and as well as deformities. And multiple cancers in one individual that also defied statistical, standards. And that by itself, along with the laboratory tests that also indicated that there were also uranium-236 uranium isotope 236, which is a man-made isotope. This man-made isotope you cannot find in nature except in laboratories and where there's a conversion process. During the conversion process, that precipitates in this process, and that by itself points that that may have definitely has come from the weapons than the environment. Furthermore, one of the victims who had, in fact, the uranium isotope levels of 2,000 in his urine, lost 27 members of his family, and he was in this dust trying to collect his family members and try to save them and their remains. He had inhaled a great deal of this dust at that time, and initially there was we were thinking that we may have done a mistake. The Uranium Medical Research Center, and they redone the test until they found out that indeed the calculation was correct.
But Mr. Mirkai, if I could just jump here, if I may, what you're telling us, Mr. Mirkai, what you're telling us is that you have evidence then that depleted uranium has been used, and it's been used in the amount that it's causing these kinds of deadly consequences, not just deadly, but even consequences that are going to remain in families for generations to come. So what have you done about these reports that you've gathered and the evidence that you've gathered? Have you been informing, for instance, the U.S. government about this or the Afghan government about this?
Yes, indeed. We have actually forwarded these reports to the U.S. government, to the U.S. State Department, and the U.S. officials, and we have gotten only lip service, unfortunately. But the Afghan government equally, since it has no control, it's an installed regime, I even took these evidences to President Karzai and sat with him for 2.5 hours about 6 months ago. And he was shocked to find out all these statistical analysis and all these photos, and promised to investigate. And subsequent to my meeting, in 2 weeks thereafter, his National Security Council, all of them opposed to even discussing these issues, because they are all installed by the foreigners, and they get their money and their food, if you will, from the U.S. funders and from the international community, so-called international community. But this tragedy needs to be fully understood. Uranium-238 has a half-life of 4.5 billion years. So until Earth exists, the Afghan people, the Iraqi people, the Yugoslavia people will be dying from this disaster. If you look, in Afghanistan as well as in Iraq as well as in Yugoslavia, you find wherever these weapons were used, you find graveyards of people dying from cancers and other unusual diseases. And in fact, I have tried for the past many years. Incidentally, we took these evidences, in fact, to the International War Crime Tribunal in Japan in 2004, in which George W. Bush was indicted in absentia. And based on the evidences that we have marshaled, he was found guilty on 13 counts of war crimes, crimes against humanity, and genocide in absentia. And of course, unfortunately, there is no body to enforce this finding, and of course, the rhetoric is quite easy. You can label anybody terrorist, but a nation state that use weapons of this magnitude that's against the international law, against U.S. law, and against any law that exists on the books.
Well, Mr. Mirafari, you're telling us that you gave this evidence and you raised this issue in the International Criminal Court in Japan, you're telling us, in 2004. Can you confirm for us that right now, or even in the past few years, that depleted uranium is or is not still being used in Afghanistan?
Well, we call it the non-depleted uranium. When we found the non-depleted uranium is the slight composition difference in the uranium level that's called depleted, non-depleted, but it's basically the same thing. These weapons are still used. In fact, U.S. aircraft called A-10 Warthog. A 10 Warthog normally, even if it doesn't use uranium projectile, and the machine gun, every third projectile is a uranium projectile. And that's the working horse of the U.S. Army in Afghanistan. They use it left and right. Equally, Apache helicopters, equally, Bradley vehicles also utilize these projectiles in these weapons. On top of the uranium munitions, microwave weapons and energy beams are widely used in Pashtun areas. You see, the insurgency control about 70% of Afghanistan. And that 70% of Afghanistan is bombed. It complements the 62.7% of the population of the Pashtuns in Afghanistan. And they have been totally targeted. But it seemed to, for the population, the non-Pashtun population, tend to forget that these weapons are weapons of mass destruction. It does not discriminate between people, who's who and who's not. It kills everybody, not only Afghans. These weapons do not recognize borders. It goes to Pakistan, it's susceptible to air, it goes to Iran and the entire region.
Right.
And this is unacceptable. This is illegal, and it's unacceptable according to international law. It's unacceptable according to the U.S.
Right.
law.
Well, let's get to the reaction that the United States has been showing about this. I do remember that years back when these allegations first emerged, the United States, even European countries, were denying that depleted uranium weapons have been used in Afghanistan. Then later on, we had acknowledgements that depleted uranium has been found in countries like Afghanistan and also, as you referred there, in Iraq and elsewhere. So when the United States government says that it depends on the amount of uranium being used or that maybe depleted uranium does not have that effect or the consequences that we're speaking about, what do you say as an expert in this field, because you've been investigating it, what do you say to that response?
It is a very good question. It is a very good question. Usually we get this rhetoric that, look, these are not very radioactive weapons, even your clothes, even your skin protects you. That is very true, but they seem to cover up this fact that when these weapons, projectiles and bunker buster bombs, they hit target, they pulverize. They pulverize, they become, nanoparticles. They are becoming susceptible to wind and water flow. And these nanoparticles are inhaled by people. They precipitate in their lungs and in their lymph system. Once they precipitate in the lungs and lymph system, they are precipitating into the cellular level of the body and causes intercellular radiation. This very intercellular radiation is the one that we are concerned about, not actual radiation targeting the skin. In fact, inhalation of this totally compromises the DNA of people. That is why when children are born, they are deformed. And it affects these nanoparticle effect the sperm and the eggs of the people, men and women, as well as it targets the mitochondria of the cell. And that is why you have various, chronic fatigue syndrome, various conditions such as multiple cancers in the body, as well as, unexplained conditions,
right.
Spontaneous abortions, mental retardation, all these things. So their rhetoric of saying that, oh, well, this is not going to harm anybody because the radiation level is low. Yes, mm-hmm. indeed, but this pulverizes, becomes nanoparticles, and people inhale it. And the inhalation causes intercellular radiation.
Let's just cross over now to Philadelphia. Lynn Dinh, a journalist and writer, is now with us to share his thoughts with us on this as well. Now, Lynn, we know that the U.S. government, if you were following the discussions that we're making here, the U.S. government has been saying, of course, that it has been using these kinds of weapons. It's been acknowledging it. At the same time, the question arises, why would the United States want to use these kinds of weapons, which are not just deadly, as I said, but as our guest there in Chicago is also telling us, are causing not even recognizing borders, causing a lot of illnesses, cancers in various and in vast large areas of land, and also not just uranium, depleted uranium, but also phosphorus bombs, also Agent Orange that was used. Why would the United States want to resort to these kinds of weapons?
It's interesting that you brought up Agent Orange, because during the Vietnam War, a vast amount of Agent Orange was used, and the U.S. also denied that it was toxic, the same way that it is denying that uranium, depleted uranium, is harmful. So it took until 1984 for American soldiers to finally win a partial lawsuit, a settlement with the Pentagon to get compensation. And the amount that was given to them was ridiculously small for a Vietnam veteran who was completely disabled. He only received $12,000 over 10 years, which is absurd. And a widow of a soldier who already died received only $3,700. So we've seen the same pattern again. That is using something which is frankly genocidal, and denying that it is harmful. And once depleted uranium gets into the environment, into the water, into the soil, into the air, it remains there for billions of years. And it doesn't just stay in these countries, although these populations are the ones who are most affected immediately. It will spread all over, because when it's airborne, it will travel across the globe. So this is a tremendous crime against humanity for generations to come, for billions of years to come, literally. Well, and the U.S. is doing it, who knows why.
If I could just jump in here.
The first reason one can speculate is because of money.
Yes, and that's the question. Yes. When we are looking at the consequences of these weapons, when we are obviously knowing that these are against international law, as you say, crime against humanity, genocide, Mr. Mirakai has referred to it, or the slow genocide of generations of people, what has stopped the international organizations, international bodies, from stopping the United States?
Well, the United Nations is under the influence of the United States, so it's not really raising a voice, and most of the European countries are allies of the United States, so it's not raising a voice. So basically, the media is not giving this any kind of coverage at all. It is a crime in itself, the lack of coverage, that this issue, the neglect of this issue, which is a critical issue.
Right. I'd just like to put the last question out to Mr. Mirakai before we run out of time. Mr. Mirakai, now that you've been going on with these investigations, you've been giving your reports to various authorities. You said earlier on that you sat down with the Afghan President Hamid Karzai about this. Tell us what actions now are being planned to save people from this and to stop their use. Are you hopeful?
Well, unfortunately, the Afghan government is, of course, whatever they do is inconsequential, because Afghanistan is an occupied country, and the Afghan president is absolutely incapable of doing anything. I sat with him 2.5 hours. It's absolutely has no future in terms of doing anything in Afghanistan, dealing with this menace. However, my hopes are that countries in around the world, especially our neighbors, Iran and other countries, could come forward and address these issues, and hopefully we can, you know, I propose a general monitoring station throughout Afghanistan, in all various parts of Afghanistan, a large research center, that these issues could be debated, as well as mechanism whereby ameliorative efforts could be introduced, whereby the longevity of people's lives could be implemented. Rather than, there is no solution. solution. You know, as I pointed out, there's no solution. You could pick up a bullet and say, okay, we'll discard it. But at least whereby we could produce certain supplements, certain mechanisms whereby people's lives could be improved. And at least education, certain education protocols could be introduced whereby people could know how to behave and how to conduct themselves when it comes to dust and so forth. But this, unfortunately, requires a great deal of funding. The U.S. is not interested to provide this funding. My hope is, and all along has been, that I hope the Muslim countries could contribute and
right,
Iran
I'm afraid I've got to stop you there,
could,
Mr. Mirakai, because
comfort.
Yes, we've run out of time, but thank you very much there, Afghan activist, writer and politician Dr. Mohammad Dawood Mirakai, joining us there live from Chicago. A big thank you as well to journalist and writer Mr. Lindin in Philadelphia with his comments. I'm afraid we've run out of time. From me, Homa Lezgi, and the rest of the team in Tehran, it's goodbye.